Welcome to the Booktopia podcast. I'm John Purcell. I'm delighted to be here with Deng Yak Adult. Did I get that right?
Yes,
you got it. Thank you very much. The way in which you pronounced it to me sounded so authentic, the way it was in my head was completely wrong. So I have a reputation for getting names completely wrong. So thank you very much for bearing with me on that.
It's a hard name.
It is. But I like Deng, though. Deng I can do. Deng's
Deng
a good
is
name.
Easy, yeah.
Yeah, Deng. Yeah, that's fine. Yeah. We're here to talk about your new book, or your first book.
Yes.
Songs of a War Boy.
Yep.
Now, this book is a honest look at the life you had before living here in Australia, and it does roll on. Mm-hmm. Living in South Sudan and being stolen into an army as a child is your sort of the backstory to this.
Yeah.
What do you think your life now would be like if the army hadn't rolled through?
I don't know, to be honest with you. The country's already been destroyed by war. I don't know if I were to be in the same position now, I don't know how my life would be so far. I don't know, I won't know that. But what can I say about the army? What did the army do to me? They have done me a lot of wrongdoings.
Mm-hmm.
And equally, they have done great justice to me, because if they didn't conscript me into the army, well, I won't have a chance to be able to have opportunity to be able to get myself educated at all, because this is one of the fruit, maybe you could say, is incidental to the death, which was the purpose. Purpose of the children at the time to go and fight as a war machineries, but incidentally I ended up with some sort of education to be able to tell my story.
That's a very generous way to look, a very optimistic way to look at what happened to you. Is that something, the way which you are, you prefer to deal with it? Say that in my mind this horrible thing ended up leading me to this great opportunity. So I'm going to work it out in my head and make that a good thing for me.
Yep, I want to make my life enjoyable. I want to enjoy it. I cannot enjoy my life living without accepting the reality, accepting the consequences, accepting the fact that if I were in South Sudan and I was not conscripted into the army, I may now be, I don't know, maybe I could be a banana farmer like my dad, and hunter like my dad, and be a fisherman like my dad, and maybe that's certainly the way of life, and that is basically you will do what your father used to do for a living. Maybe I could have gone that way and have no other, and be deprived of this life that I have so far, which I think is a good thing that happened to me in general.
Mm-hmm.
If it wasn't for that, I wouldn't be here at all. I wouldn't be here, so I think I have to accept that, because the war brought me to Australia. It just brought me with that wind, that blow from the east to the west, and brought me to this shore. And I landed in Lakik, the most luckiest country in the world, and the most beautiful country in the world. So I am not taking anything for granted. I think my suffering, the war, the diseases, the injuries, and the education that I gained so far, and where I'm heading, they all for a purpose. They have to have a purpose. Otherwise, I don't have any explanation for it.
So when the publisher comes to you and says, yeah, we saw the moving and wonderful ad for Western Sydney University, and we want to tell your story. Can you write your story for us? Did you go, do I have to? Do I really have to write all that down? I've moved on. I'm doing other things. Was it difficult to actually spend so much time on a part of your history that you've put in the past?
Yeah, it was hard. It was a hard decision to make. It was one of the harder decisions I have to make to be able to open my life to everyone and be able to see the life that I lived and the life that I'm living at the moment. It's shameful. It's like you just unveiled your most trusted inner self, which is yourself, the one that you trust most. You now giving it to the public to be able to see your defect and be able to wake you up. So I'm become open book. I'm just like an open book with no secrecy about my life. So it somehow is a way of being able to resolve myself and not being able to resolve who I am and try to question things that I don't understand, and then I would be in a trap. So I want to get out of that trap because I am still living in it.
And does the process give you the strength or even greater strength now to help others? I mean, you seem to be someone who is involved in the community, who wants to change things for the better for others. Does knowing your own story well and being able to speak it well and use it as a club to change the world, in a sense, to sort of, if they won't, if all the politics and all the yabbering and everything just goes on and on, and the garbage in politics at the moment about refugees and, yes, and like, if they can't get their act together, you'll come with a story which will change them and will make them think.
Absolutely, absolutely. Let's look at the world. We get one single world, one globe, one world. Mm. All we got is an imaginary borders, and they are designed to separate us from our brothers and our friends, separate us from learning knowledge from other people. Those borders are the problem that are facing humanity, and because of the border that we put there, we have a conflict. And since we acknowledge that the borders, because that's international law, we have to be in that norms, and then we then ask the question, can we jump at least certain borders and be able to know about the other person? Can we look over there in that wall, for example, in Israel, where we have they built a wall because of the war? It was basically to create a barrier. In South Sudan, where we separated with the north, with the created barrier, and the barrier we're creating them as human. But we need to be able to peep, look over the wall, and try to see how is my friend or my brother or my sister, how they reacting, because we're all human. It's just the fact that we want to harm one another, but we could help each other if we understand that humanity has we've been destroying each other for obviously no reason at all, no reason. I will never see any reason why we're destroying each other, why we're rejecting each other, why we're enslaving each other, why we're killing each other. I don't know, I will never find a reason, because nobody ever sit here with me and said it's okay to kill somebody because I hate him. Why? It's a question why. Why is that you feel happy about somebody's death or somebody failure or somebody misfortune? And that is not. These are the things that I normally say. They are un-Australian. We are a great nation, and we got a long way to go, but we have done enough so far, and we're doing enough.
Well, I was thinking, because you said that it's a wonderful place to live, Australia, and certain parts, nearly all of Africa, there are wonderful places to live. If there was a war to break out in Australia, if there was a civil war broke out in Australia, a lot of people want to leave Australia, even though it's a wonderful place.
Yes.
They want to leave.
Yes.
They want to go to Papua New Guinea. They want to go across to Indonesia to get the hell out.
But that's a scenario that we don't want to happen.
No, we don't want to happen, but it makes sense. It's not because people aren't coming to Australia because it's greener over there. It's because there's hell behind them.
Absolutely.
And they want to leave that. It's perfect sense. It's completely irrational to think that people will move out of a place they're quite happy with.
Yes.
To go somewhere else, all that trouble.
Yes.
To go somewhere else, just for greener pastures. There's always seems to be in people's movements around the world.
Yes.
A bad cause behind them.
Absolutely.
And our doors should be open to these people, to let them in, to help them, to give them a better life. I was thinking that
that's a wise way of looking at it.
it kills me that people don't see it more often in that way. You know. I was thinking about your story. I once met a woman who was very old, tiny, tiny woman, bent over, and she'd been a child, or I think an early teen in the Holocaust, and had been in the camps. And in the camps, she was a clever little kid and was running around and making her way, making her life in there. Her parents had been killed, and she stole from this lady who was there. She thought she was really old, but she was only about 5 years older than her. And she kept stealing. It was an easy mark. And so she kept taking carrots and kept taking things, coming back. Anyway, after the war and 20 years after the war, she kept thinking about this woman. And she wondered if she got out and what happened to her. She found her living in Sydney. She was in Sydney. The woman was in Sydney. So she went, and she went to the woman and said, "Look, I did all these bad things. I feel terrible." The woman's like, "You're a kid. What do you, doesn't matter." And it ended up the older woman was quite sickly, and so the younger one looked up. They were both old by this stage, so they were looking after each other. You're talking about shame before, and the way in which we can balance out in this life is to do something good in return. Do you feel that's the impetus behind all the things that you're doing at the moment?
Absolutely. I deserved to be treated with dignity. I equally believe that others need to be respected, need equal dignity, need to be treated like a human being because they're human. And their misfortune is just something that we didn't have a control over it, but if they are in our hand, and or we have help, there's a help that is available, and then the turning a blind eye against these people is equally criminal.
Yep.
It's equally criminal because where they are driven away by the war, the country where they are driven away because of the war, and they're now seeking new place to start a new living. And a good movie is Apocalypto. Say, we shall seek a new beginning. Let's seek a new beginning, new land, new life. And you deny them that opportunity to start again, to have at least an ability to be able to live life, because there's a meaning of being born and there's a meaning of being dead. And these two things, they're all equal, because we are born and then we die. But what makes us human is because this period here where we are born toward our death, we have to do good deed for others. And that is how humanity has come this far.
Yep.
Because if we didn't help one another, would we be here today?
No.
Yes, even your own mother. Your own mother could have just, just got rid of you when you're young because really you're just not human. But you are a human, you are a future. And that is a helping hand that you have to go, it's a cycle.
Yeah.
And we know when we talk about, when you mention about a disaster like Holocaust, as we know very well, we destroyed each other nearly. We destroyed humanity. And we have World War I and World War II. And we have a genocide in Rwanda, and we have a genocide in Darfur, and other genocides that are going on in the 21st century. And we turn our eyes, our blind eyes, and all we do is just to say that we don't want you, and turn back, go back where you came from. Well, I'm getting shot at.
Yeah.
I have no choice. I need at least a time to breathe, or give me an opportunity to settle for now, and treat me with dignity, because if the solution become available for the country where I came from, I might just go back there and stay there. So all I need is a resting place, and you are a visitor, and you should be treated with a respect. And that is the most important way, that's a beautiful way of looking at it, because most migrants, they always had this in their mind. They would think that they would go back home,
mm-hmm.
home. And they had that in their mind, and they grow old. And some of them even they could spend 50 years in Australia, and they still think that they would go home, because home is now psychologically in their head.
Mm-hmm.
And they haven't physically settled down by having a physical structure where they can leave and say, well, now I can give my children a second chance, I will assist them. Because they haven't settled, we haven't settled, let them settle mentally and psychologically. That means they will always have a different, a foreign thinking in their mind that they are not wanted, they are unwanted. And the feeling of unwanted, it become a despair. And despair follow, a lot of things will follow, a lot of problems, the family breakdown, the no lack of support that these people would be able to receive in there. And secondly is, people that went through trauma or they've been affected by war, it is hard for them to disclose to their friend, because there have to be level of trust have to be gained. So they can't tell you that they're suffering from a mental illness. And also there's a cultural issue where some cultures will refuse to acknowledge mental illness because it's a bad thing, it's stigma. And without such understanding, and then we are pushing those people, even those we accepted them, we're pushing them to the edge. No matter what, we're pushing them to the edge, and eventually we will lose those people.
You you had this chaotic, interesting, heartbreaking life, and you came to Australia and you chose I'm the son of a lawyer, so one of the most boring subjects in the world to do, a very long subject, and with torts and and contracts and all those sort of things to get through. Why law out of all the things that was on offer in Australia?
I think, did I just out-talk you, did I? Yeah, look, I didn't. It wasn't my idea to study law.
No.
It was my lead brothers who actually suggested to me that I study law. And my uncle, Philip, who's now in South Sudan. He was an Australian citizen. He's an Australian citizen, but he went and worked in South Sudan. And he's working in a ministry of finance, and he's doing a great job, and he's an Australian citizen,
yeah, right.
Who is a Sudanese-born trainee, and if you go there, these are the people that are actually stopping things like corruption to breed, because they adopted Australian way of life, culture, thoroughness, and accountability. So these are the people that suggested to me to study law. I wanted to do science, because science and water and agriculture, because of the Nile water, I always had interest in the Nile water. And that is where I wanted to go to study agriculture or science. That was my vision in my mind. Just imagine son of a fisherman and a farmer. That's all in my mind. There was nothing there, but the idea of a law was just too remote for me to
And there is still time to do whatever you want to do. So you've done law, are you thinking of, is there a possibility of you going back using your law degree in Sudan? Is that something that you're in the back of your head that you've?
Yeah, look, I have a supporting family, and what I mean by supporting family, I mean Australia is my family, a lot of them, and a lot of lawyers that are good friends, also within the legal. And legal profession, there are a lot of good lawyers there, a lot of great people with an expert, second to none, and judicious in a way that I can imagine, because we have a perfect, not a perfect system, but a great system compared to other systems. So therefore, I would say it is perfect in that regard, despite the faults and other problems, because it's a system we've designed as human.
Yeah.
So therefore, there have to be some sort of problem. It is a perfect system that I would replicate this one. I would love to replicate this system, the Australian justice system, and transplant this in South Sudan.
Mm.
And I know if South Sudan, South Sudanese government, especially the youngest nation, accepted our help or my help, and then I've been knocking on every lawyer's door. I've been knocking every door and say, look, I want you to go and train judges, train lawyers, do something about it, because we are a family, we are intertwined, we are a network, we are not alone. Mm-hmm. I would never think of doing something in South Sudan. I would never think of doing it alone without doing it with Australia,
mm-hmm.
or my people in Australia, because without this great nation, that without them, I won't be here. So I would always be happy to raise my hand, to beg, to say, please fix something, fix a system, and they will be there to fix the system. So one day, I hope I will be able to go with Australian professional and be able to try to work to fix the country, fix the legal system, and we can move forward as a nation. And I think that's a way that I'm looking at it. Not because I want to move there, because this is my home.
Yeah.
And equal there is my, where I was born, but this is my home. That's where I live. That's where I sleep. That's where I have peace. That's where I have friends. But over there, there is still a connection. And that connection there, I have to do something because of humanity. I can't just turn my blind eye. I can't say it because they want to kill me before, or they recruit me. I don't want to do something for the human, because that would be selfish for me to reject it, the country where I was born.
Deng, thank you very much for coming in and talking with us.
You're welcome.
If you want to know more about Deng and his story, Songs of War Boy, My Story, is available from booktopia.com.au right now.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. And don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.